The Sewers of Paris is independent, ad-free, and listener-supported. Head over to patreon.com/mattbaum to join the folks who make the show possible and to check out the rewards for backers. Hello and welcome to The Sewers of Paris. My guest this week is the drag artist known as Deer. You may know her from her live streams on Twitch, where she plays primarily horror games. She's also a founder of Stream Queens, a collective of drag artists, makeup monsters, and creatures who adopt amazing costumes and personas to live stream games. But off-camera, Deer's a quiet, introverted artist who never expected her drag alter ego to take on a life and career of her own. We'll have that in a minute. First, a reminder that The Sewers of Paris is on Twitter and Facebook, where I post clips of the stuff that we talk about on each episode. I hope you'll join me for our next fun-friendly live stream. That's on October 10th at 11 a.m. Pacific. There's a link at the top of The Sewers of Paris Twitter feed. And check out my other shows. Culture Cruise on YouTube is a deep dive into queer entertainment milestones. I just posted a video about the 90s sitcom Dinosaurs, and its very weird link to a real-life gay Transylvanian dinosaur hunter. Check out Queens of Adventure and Queens of Adventure Legends, two narrative comedy shows with drag heroes going on adventures in a world of fantasy. Now, here's Deer. I'm speaking with Deer, founder of the Stream Queens on Twitch. Thanks so much for joining me.
Hi, Matt. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so excited to talk to you. Tell me, what is the entertainment that changed your life?
Mortal Kombat 2 for the Sega Genesis. I'm one of those people on Twitter every once in a while, like, adding Ed Boon. Like, can you please add Melina to Mortal Kombat 11? I think I was in like the second or the third grade when I first played it or when I first saw it. But first of all, it was like the first mature game that I had ever played. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know why I was allowed to play that. I guess my parents just are really like liberal. So they like whatever me and my brother wanted to play or watch or whatever, they sort of like would let us within reason. But the first mature game. So I was like, oh my gosh, it's so like. Like, I love Street Fighter. Also, I've always loved fighting games, but Mortal Kombat was the first one where I was like, oh my gosh, it's so cool. It's got blood. It's got sexy characters, like guys with their shirts off, girls in leotards. Like, it was just so different and fun and cool. And Melina and Katana are just like it for me. Like, they
When you say like adult game, it is like, it, you know, in comparison to, I don't know, like Yoshi's Island is like the furthest end of the spectrum away from it that I can think of. But like, describe like what is in that game that is maybe shocking to see like a small child playing.
Well, first you could like punch people's heads off and knock them into spikes and stuff. But it's also just so fantastical. Like, it's so campy. Like, everything is so over the top that it's like laughable, because it's not like it's realistic violence or anything. It's like, it's cartoon violence, pretty much. And it just created an impression on me. It's sort of like, it always reminded me of like the Ren and Stimpy of mature rated games, because it's just so ridiculous. Like, the amount of blood and like, when, have you played Mortal Kombat 2?
Oh yeah, I'm familiar.
I love it so much. But like, when you do the things where you, like a fatality where people explode, like, hundreds of skulls and bones and rib cages come out of them. Like all the special effects are just overblown to the point of like, it's asinine. And yeah, that just, you know, speaks to me.
We're speaking right at the beginning of October, which I guess is maybe an appropriate time, because it has sort of the same vibe as a haunted house, in that there's like a ridiculous, over the top, elevated, heightened, you know, Tim Rogers just did a lovely video about Doom where he talked about like violence as comedy. And it's just so absurd that I think it's very easy to just laugh at the ridiculous. What is it like? There's the one where like you pull someone's head off and their spine is just like dangling underneath.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's a scorpion move or something like that. But, but yeah, it's just all so, so weird. It really is just a caricature of, I don't even know what. Like, it's not based in reality in any form.
Did you get that as a kid? Like, did you get like, oh, this is campy and over the top? Or like, what was the appeal to you? And how old were you when you were playing it?
I feel like I was like 8 or something. I mean, I could do the math. I'm not a mathematician. I recognized it as such at that time, because like, I remember as a kid noticing how many like skulls and bones would come out of people when they exploded. Just like you said, it's like a haunted house or like a Halloween kind of thing. It really was just fun fantasy. It was never real.
Did you have a favorite character?
Melina. Absolutely always Melina, because she's the sexiest one, but she's also like a monster, and that like sort of spoke to me as a gay child. Like, it's, I mean, I don't think that gay people are monsters, obviously, but it just like that made sense to me, that she can't be herself. She has to pretend that she's the twin of Kitana. She can't just be herself.
This is going to sound like a real weird thing to compare it to, but what you're describing reminds me a lot of Samantha on Bewitched.
Oh, cute. Mm-hmm.
That, you know, like, oh, well, we're among mortals. No one must know.
Yes.
But I've got my secret that they think is terrible, but it's actually a source of power for me.
Yes, absolutely. I love Bewitched. I always love the mom. What is her name?
Oh, Endora.
What an icon. Her eyeshadow, her outfits.
Yes.
So perfect.
Yeah, not to sidetrack this conversation completely about Bewitched, but like when that show, when they went to color and you could actually see the greens and the purples that she's in, just gorgeous.
Brilliant.
So did you have like, folks, I think part of the appeal of Mortal Kombat is the shock of people who are maybe not in on the joke. Mm-hmm. Were there folks who were like, oh my God, I can't believe you're playing this, or this is too violent, we got to take this away?
My parents were never like that. I don't think like babysitters or anything were ever like that. But I remember when like they were trying to pass laws to like ban it and stuff, mm-hmm. because it was like so violent. But I'm really in the camp of like, it has nothing to do with real life. There's no way that you can like pull someone's head off with their spine and stuff like that. Like,
right.
At the same time, but a few years later, like trying to get Resident Evil banned and stuff like that. I mean, I've always liked games with monsters, and like monsters aren't real. So like, hello.
Yeah. You know, I was just playing Doom Eternal, and this was after watching a video about like how somebody called it a murder simulator. And you have to think so hard about the rhythm of like shooting, chainsawing, punching. Like there's so much like strategy and mechanics happening in your head. Like, there's just no time to think about like the joy of gore and murder.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, gore and stuff like that can be like thrilling and stuff. But as a fan of the arts, there's like never been an overlap with real life. Like video game and movie violence has always been just not pertaining to real life at all. And it like boggles my mind sometimes that like people think that there's a link between it.
Were games a big part of your life? Like, I know you in the context of Stream Queens on Twitch, but to what extent were like games something that dominated your thinking and your time when you were younger?
I was a kid in the 90s, so I can't think of any moments where I didn't have video games in my life, because my dad and my brother have always loved technology and computers and games and stuff like that. So like when I was a little kid, like very, very young, I remember I would watch my brother play Commander Keen. Thought that was so cool. I loved Day of the Tentacle. It's Escape from Monkey Island, right?
There were a whole bunch of Monkey Islands. I think Escape was one of them.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I mean, and then my brother had a Super Nintendo, so you mentioned Yoshi's Island. I loved Yoshi's Island, all the Mario games. Video games have always been like around me and accessible, and I've loved them forever.
You mentioned your affection for Melina and sort of the glamorous but dangerous characters. Is that something that carried across to other games that you played?
Oh, for sure. Like Bayonetta.
I was just thinking of Bayonetta.
What an icon. I mean, you mentioned camp within video games, and I would say that, like, you know, if you're looking for it in Mortal Kombat, it's like obvious, but like at first glance, it is the shock that you mentioned. But Bayonetta is like, the camp is just like unreal from the get-go. Like if you see it, it's campy. I love her. I love that game. I just love badass hot bitches in charge. I love Disney villains.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned like other forms of entertainment. So like Disney villains like Cruella and Ursula, Maleficent, the Evil Queen. My favorite is the witch from Snow White. Mm-hmm. She's my absolute favorite because I love the transformation. So she's like this beautiful, glamorous woman. And then she drinks a potion, becomes this like horrible hag. Like I feel like I feel like that's subverting, like, most of the time it's like, you know, ugly person takes a potion to become quote-unquote beautiful or whatever. So it just, like, is this really cool, different concept. So she's my favorite.
Yeah, she's really reveling in the monstrousness.
Uh-huh.
That the Snow White witch is having such a good time. Like, there's, when she drinks the potion, there's like a skeleton just off to the side, and she's, mm-hmm. I think she says something like thirsty and laughs and kicks its skull. Like,
oh, it's the crow. The crow is like sitting on the skull, and then she like laughs so maniacally that like it hides within the skull, and then I think she offers the drink to it.
Mm-hmm. I just, for you. Yeah.
I just find it so cool that like this amazing, like, statuesque, she's very reserved, or not reserved, she's more restrained, and then she becomes this horrible witch, and suddenly she's unhinged. Like, mm-hmm. I've always thought, like, maybe that's the real one. Like, she's taking a potion to undo the magic or something. They never really explain it, but I just found it just, like, reminds me of drag. It's like, you put on this costume or transformation, and then you can become unhinged. You can become this other version of yourself that no one's ever seen before.
Yeah. She really, like, cuts loose. So let's talk about drag. How did that come into your life?
Like I said, I've always been inspired and looked up to these strong women. And so as a gay guy, it just, you know, I've had interest in the feminine things, in the more colorful, the more sparkly, like, you know, just standard flamboyant kind of stuff. I always loved Barbies. I loved the female characters, as I was talking about. Even though Melina is nitty and gritty, she's also wearing pink. I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I mentioned that my parents were like always liberal. So I've always had access to like gay interest. Like my parents, like both of their favorite movie is Rocky Horror Picture Show. And my dad loves Whatever Happened to Baby Jane and stuff like that. Like they just love camp and gay interest, generally speaking. So growing up loving the feminine things, I started to love makeup and fashion and stuff like that. And the makeup world sort of pushed me into having more of a drag interest, because without having the interest of drag, I mean, interest of makeup, Rocky Horror and stuff like that, like I didn't have interest in doing it. I just like was enjoying watching it. But as I enjoyed makeup, it sort of led me into loving drag. And then the interest in Disney villains and cartoons and video games and stuff, like these are all, generally speaking, caricatures of whatever they are. Like they're over the top, they're amplified versions of people. And so that's what drag is to me.
You had a pretty strong foundation, it sounds, from your parents' interest in like spooky and macabre stuff like Rocky Horror and Baby Jane. Did other kids get that, or were you like the weird, creepy kid?
I was definitely the different kid. I mean, like I mentioned, like I was just like feminine and I was myself, and my parents like nurtured those aspects of my personality. So sometimes I would be the odd one out, but I had lots of friends as a child too, because like I also liked Star Wars, and like I, like we were talking about, I liked video games. So there was definitely some overlap, but near and dear to my heart, video games, drag, stuff like that, for sure.
When did you start doing makeup?
I've talked about this on my stream before. So I loved makeup ever since I was a child, because I think it was the Disney villains, because the artists for Disney, especially in like the Cruellas, the Evil Queen, the Maleficents, they use makeup to evoke the personality. Like they're vain, they take time in their appearance, like they look creepy, stuff like that. So I started as an interest of just like, you know, the aspects that create this person's visual personality. And then it just like started to trickle into like, you know, makeup is this thing that you can put on your face and you can like change your appearance and you can transform. And I always loved Halloween. So when I was a kid, I was in third grade. I remember it just like yesterday. I'm from a little tiny town, and we basically had like a project where we were celebrating pilgrims for some reason, because it was the 90s. And like how they were like liberated from their like they found religious freedom in the United States or whatever. But
yeah, perhaps not the most complete story, but
yeah, we had to draw this one character, this one pilgrim girl in a story that we were reading. And I drew this girl with full on like blue eye makeup and like red lips and like the most blush and all this stuff. And I remember the teacher told me like they left England to like leave this kind of like lifestyle. The characterization that I made for her was very like queen of England kind of, I guess, is how they interpreted it. And I remember I went home crying and my mom called my teacher and was like, let him paint that girl however he wants. He's creative. And so I was allowed to have my pilgrim girl painted up like trash, and it was so funny. Like looking back, because I remember my drawing had like erase marks all over it, because the teacher wanted me to like erase the colored pencil, but like it just like messed it up. Like you can't undo that color on paper.
Mm-hmm. What was do you remember like what kind of look you had then? Like I know you now for like a very like arch fenin, and it feels very like painterly. Your face often looks very, the face that you paint looks like, you know, like a painting, like a work of art. What were your early, you know, when you were still learning, like was there something that was a inspiration or a model for you?
Oh God. So I really believe when you want to build a skill, practice makes perfect. But the first time I ever did makeup on someone, my goodness, it was atrocious. It was so bad, but I loved it. I loved putting the makeup on her and like just trying out different things and blending the colors and stuff like that. But it was just like God awful. And it really jump-started my interest in like actual makeup. Cause before then it was just always Halloween or drawing it on paper, like, you know, customizable video games and putting them in heavy makeup. And so after that, I started to wear it to school. So
how
I tested it on
over?
My friends. Oh, it was fine. No, like, I don't know if anyone ever brought it to my parents, or like, I'm sure that teachers were gossiping to each other, because I'm from New England. And so I feel like people probably talked about it. I remember one person like came to me, because it started with just like a little bit of eyeliner. And then like, I started to wear eyeshadow, and then I started to wear eyelashes, and then I started to wear face makeup and lip makeup. And like, it just like snowballed, because I was just like experimenting with it and like trying to figure out what kind of look I liked. I'm sure that people started rumors or gossiped or something, because I remember one person came up to me and they were like, are you going to like get gender reassignment surgery or something like that? And I was like, no, I'm just wearing heavy makeup. It's not that big of a deal. And I remember I would get stares when I'd go to the mall. My immediate family, like, I couldn't be luckier. I feel so blessed to have them. They have always been so, so supportive and so kind, and just like always just wanting the best for me, which is like, you know, creatively expressing myself and stuff like that. My extended family, not as much, but most of them are cool. And most of them have never said anything about me or my expression. But like, I know that my grandmother wasn't always approving of even just like being more flamboyant, so I wouldn't wear makeup around her, because you know, you pick your battles,
right? Yes. Yeah. Were there
sort of
like
Thanksgiving I'd go barefaced.
Okay, so it sounds like, I mean, you're doing a little bit of code switching.
Oh well, you have to. We all have to, don't we? I mean, it sucks, but you gotta pick your battles, and you gotta be the version of yourself that it's safe to be in certain situations.
Did you have video game characters kind of, I guess, infiltrating or inspiring the looks that you were putting together?
At that time, probably not. Because video games is always like what I would do as a pastime. But how I would creatively express myself was through the makeup and like, you know, wearing cool clothes and stuff at that time. So I feel like there wasn't a lot of overlap between that. But I was always inspired by cartoons and like fashion models and stuff like that. Like when I was in high school at this time, my room was all like Elle and Vogue and W Magazine and stuff like that, but also GamePro, Resident Evil and Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat and stuff like that.
I love the collage that you're describing of all these different influences. Like, there's a high fashion like photo spread right next to like Game Informer and you know, and I think it's one of those things where that meme that was going around recently of like, my son can't be gay, he's obsessed with women.
Yeah.
But the, you know, the women are all like gay icon women.
I don't know what my parents thought of me.
Was like at that time, like, what did you regard as like your, I don't know, like career ambitions or just like what you saw for yourself as an adult?
I had lots of art classes and I actually went to art school, but I found it more passion. I'm more passionate about makeup and drag and my streaming these days than I am for illustration, which I went for. But when I was young and then going into a teenager, I always wanted to be like a storyboard and like character designer for video games. Like, I wanted to design my own fighting game for like the longest time.
Wow, that's tell me about like what your ideal fighting game would be.
In my mind, it was like a 3D exploration game, and then when you get into a fight, it's a fighting game. And I had like all these notebooks of characters that I wanted to be in them, and like I had stories for them, but like it was all very rudimentary.
I mean, I think that's a great idea. Like, the combination of building your character up like it's an RPG, so you're like picking your stats and your abilities and your class and all that stuff, and then using that in an arena for like a fist fight. I think honestly, I love that. And I know
it sort of sounds like it would work, right?
Yeah. I mean, for sure. Especially with, tell me more about like your characters that you designed, and like, were there ones that you identified with?
My favorite one, like, she was like a version of Death, like Lady Death. But I remember like I would design these stupid outfits for them. And so like she had heart motifs. So she had like a sweater, but like she had hearts over her nipples. And this is me like loving Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter and stuff, and probably seeing Armika, where she has hearts on her nipples, and I'm like, ooh, that's a good idea. And I'm a little kid, and I don't realize like the sexual connotations and stuff like that. I remember one of my favorites was like, my mom would always be in the garden, like just tending to flowers and stuff. And so I thought, like, how cool would it be if it was like Soul Calibur, where they all had weapons, and like there's like a girl that has like a trowel in one hand, and then like a little, like, I don't know what it's called, but it's like, it looks like a little tiny handheld rake for like,
scratching area soil.
Yeah, like scratching up soil. So I imagine like a trowel in one hand, like a little rake thing in another hand, and like she fights with them. I just thought silly.
I mean, that's basically how Pikmin happened. Is I think Miyamoto was looking at like just creatures in the backyard, and he was like, hey, you know what would be a good game?
I love it. Pikmin is so cool.
Tell me about the creation of Deer. Like, how did Deer come into existence? Like, as the character?
Deer is like an extension of me outside of drag. It's like it's like, you know, that gay suit of armor that I put on for me to be more, I don't know, different and like express myself in different ways. Because I am somewhat introverted. Like, I could be like alone for a long time and just like be on my own doing my thing. But Deer allows me to like speak to people and be more extroverted and like be glamorous and stuff like that. And so it just like came from a point of wanting to express myself more, because like I got bored of like wearing makeup as a boy. And for a lot of my 20s, I sort of let my self-expression take a backseat to like doing makeup on other people and doing gigs and like stuff like that. And drag sort of let me go back to myself and like nurture my own creativity, instead of just like, you know, I go to a wedding and I do a woman's makeup for her wedding.
When was the first time, like, or maybe there wasn't a first time, but when did you start thinking of yourself like in terms of like identifying as Deer? Like, where did the name come from, and where, like, how did you discover how freeing and liberating it was to be in that persona?
So I feel like 2014 maybe was when I was like, okay, when Halloween comes around, I want to do drag. You know, Halloween is most people's introduction to doing drag themselves, whether it's temporary or long-standing, usually it's like, ooh, let me take this opportunity to like explore, because Halloween is, it's easier to dress up as a in a costume when it's Halloween. No one really asks as many questions and stuff like that. I think that's where it comes from. But around then was when I started to do Halloween and drag. And like every year after that, I would like be like, okay, what's my next like drag costume gonna be? And I kept looking forward to it. And because I was a makeup artist, I've been a makeup artist for like 15 years. So when I was dabbling in makeup as a teenager, I loved it so much that it became my passions and my pastimes and my career for a long time. And so the nature of loving makeup and wanting to do makeup, and me having, before being a makeup artist, just wearing heavy makeup all the time, like your best model is yourself because you could just do whatever you want. Mm. And so that escalated from like testing out looks on myself and then looks for Halloween and stuff to like, I want to do this more often. I want to do drag. Like you see the beautiful drag on TV and like at gay clubs and stuff. And it's just, I felt like I wanted to do it. And so I was dabbling in styling myself within drag, but like not really applying it to anything for a while. And so my boyfriend and I got Overwatch in 2016 when it came out. And okay. My computer at the time couldn't run it, or maybe it wasn't out yet, but like we knew that my computer that I had at the time couldn't run it. So we looked for an upgrade, and I got a new gaming laptop. And once I realized that I could actually run games on this laptop, because before then I was only playing console. And so with this new computer, I was like, oh my God, how cool would it be to be in drag and do like Let's Plays or something like that? And so I had recently discovered Twitch, and I forget how I came about it, but like literally it wasn't on my radar at all until that summer. And then I was like, why not be the streaming drag queen? Why not go on Twitch and be in full face and just play the games that I love to play? So I played Resident Evil on Twitch, and it was my first time like fully like, here I am, I'm Deer, nice to meet you. And that's where it all started.
How was that received? Like now there's like a great community, but when you started, I think there you would have been like among the very first, if not the first, who was like regularly streaming in drag, right?
So the first I ever saw besides myself was Samira Close, and she's Portuguese, or she's Brazilian. She's Brazilian, but she speaks Portuguese. But mm-hmm. She was the first one I ever saw, but I didn't even discover her for a long time on there because she speaks a completely different language than me. So I had no way of discovering her until someone showed her to me. I think that she is like the OG Twitch drag queen, but she doesn't really have much exposure in the United States, I guess. And I went into it blind, so I didn't have any reference points. I just was like, video games and drag make sense to me. Someone out there will probably like it, but if no one likes it, this is for me. Like, I want to put my drag in a vehicle and create a product that, like, I want to watch. Something that I want to watch because I love drag and I love video games, so it just made sense. But when I was doing it, I had nobody that I knew doing it. I started with no following at all. Like, everything I have today, like, started at that point in 2016. I basically like instant messaged my friends, and I was just like, hi, I'm in drag and I'm playing video games. Do you want to come watch me and like hold my hand virtually? Because I'm scared and I'll probably get a troll. And they were like, well, sure. And like, I can't even remember if I had told my boyfriend ahead of time. I think I told him like once I was already in drag, and I was like, this is my plan. Twitch having at that time, they had communities. So it wasn't tags at the time, but you could like go to the community, the LGBTQIA+ community, and be able to find people streaming to that thing. And so that's how I was able to start a following and make friends and like start to have a sense of belonging. Because when I first started, I didn't know that communities were there. Tags weren't a thing. Like, I didn't know what to expect. And of course, I'd have the occasional trolls, but the amount of like welcoming and like love that I've received over the years, but especially at that beginning point, it was amazing. Like, I don't know if I would still be doing it if I didn't have like strangers come in and be like, wow, this is so cool. and like have regulars that are like, wow, when are you going to stream again next? Like, oh my gosh, what makeup do you use and stuff like that?
It sounds like you went into it pretty nervous about how it would go. Like, you know, not spreading the word around too much and asking your friends to come, like, keep you company just in case it was like a disaster or something.
Yeah.
So there's a real mismatch between like the fear that you had about how it could go wrong or whatever, and then the pleasant surprise of how well it went.
I'm a big believer of, like, if you want to see something in the world and it's not happening, like, you manifest it and, like, put it out there. And so I think that passion and, like, my belief in what I do and, like, the fun and the rewarding, like, sense that I get afterwards, people like it. People like that. And I've had so many people come to me and say that, like, I've helped inspire them to come out or become a drag artist or just stream in general. And so, like, that is, it's such an amazing feeling. And you mentioned earlier, like, there is a community of drag artists now, and I love it so much. I love it so much. We've got the Stream Queens team, we've got a drag tag, and, like, me being able to build my platform and use it to benefit other people and, like, inspire other people to create art, like, that is the biggest and best takeaway I could have ever hoped for. Because, like I mentioned, like, I didn't have any point of reference at that time, but now we do. We have a group of people, and every day we have more and more people. So it's just special. It's really awesome. And people that were there at the very beginning, I mean, not at the very beginning, but, like, once I was doing it for a while, I started to discover people. So people like Drag Trashly and Chalora and Elix, They were there, like, when we were just sort of figuring out if drag was feasible on the platform at all. And now we have drag creators on the front page every so often. We've got a drag tag that I helped. I worked with someone from Twitch to get that approved. And there's been drag programs that are official through Twitch. I'm a Twitch ambassador. I had a drag panel, like, I've been in Twitch commercials. Like, I feel so blessed that they, like, not only that they recognize drag as an art form, they recognize queer creators on their platform in general, but, like, they have actively been like, you are, like towards me, they've been like, you represent a community, and, like, we don't want to brush it under the rug. We want to celebrate it.
Yeah, tell me about, in that role that you're in, have there been, like, particular victories that you're proud of, or, like, accomplishments or achievements? I know you mentioned, like, adding the hashtag to bring some visibility to other streamers. What have you been able to do, like, in this prominent role that has had an impact on other folks?
So last year I went to Twitch headquarters and we had a photo shoot, and they had special activations and things that they involved me in, and as well as the other ambassadors. It's just, like, people with special communities and cool things that they're doing that you don't see all the time on the platform, generally speaking. So there was someone that was a cook, and there's someone that, like, plays StarCraft but speaks about, like, mental health all the time. There's people that are, like, speedrunners that have, like, the best reflexes for video games in the world, cosplayers, like, just, like, this huge different group of people that represented different things all across the platform in all these different ways. And I feel very blessed, because yesterday, I think it's because I'm an ambassador that they pull from me every once in a while, but I was on The Weekly yesterday. So that's Twitch's recap show for like new things coming out and like popular games that are happening and stuff like that. So they had an interview with the Among Us developers, and then they had a little segment with me where we talked about horror games. Last year so Twitch had a special program for ambassadors where they wanted to celebrate mods, so they called upon the ambassadors to feature their mods for an all-expense-paid trip to TwitchCon, where they filmed a commercial basically, like, advertising the role of mods. And it was all funded by Miller Lite, but it was all about championing mods and what they do for our channels. Because if anyone listening doesn't know, moderators help to run a streamer's channel. So the streamer is, like, the person, they're the talent, like front facing. And then the moderators are running the chat and making sure that like all the logistics are running correctly and like trolls don't get through and bad comments don't get through and like stuff like that. But Twitch and Miller Lite celebrated the mods, and my mod was able to convince them to feature the stream queens in attendance. So there were 5 drag artists talking about Twitch and moderating and holding Miller Lite, and that is all because Twitch was like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if like one of our drag creators was part of this program? I know that was like a really long tangent, but it was just so cool and I'm so proud of it. And like, if you ever want the link, it's this whole 5-minute video just like about moderators and drag and beer, and it's amazing.
That is fantastic. I will definitely include a link to that in the description for this episode. And like the combination of all those things, like the community and having a good time, and your position there where you can, you know, recognize people who want to be a part of it and bring them in and make them feel included. I mean, that seems like a lovely place to be right now, especially right now.
Absolutely. I mean, I felt a responsibility to, because I said before, I didn't have any reference point. I didn't have any friends when I started. I just sort of got them along the way. And so I felt a responsibility to not only champion queer artists and queer art in general, but like use my spotlight of loving drag so passionately and extend it to other people, because I think that we all can learn from each other. I think that we can, like, I have a big platform and a big following now, and so I can expose them to even more drag creators and hope to help them grow while expressing your art.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much, Matt. It was a pleasure.
Thanks again to Dear for joining me. I have a couple of recommendations this week. First, of course, go follow Dear and the Stream Queens. You can find her at twitch.tv/DEERE and the Stream Queens at streamqueens.net. No matter the time of day, there's always a bunch of Stream Queens performers live streaming in that community, ready to chat and play and just hang out and keep you company. And on that topic, I'd like to recommend 3 in particular, all of them performers from my other podcast, Queens of Adventure. Arsa Nikki is a meticulous gamer who loves to chat while streaming makeup transformations, life sims, and the occasional RPG and party game. You can find her at twitch.tv/arsanikki. Freya Love is an artist who streams makeup and exploration games like Breath of the Wild at twitch.tv/freyalove. And London Bradshaw is a chaotic queen whose streams are never not surprising. She's at twitch.tv/londonbradshaw, London with a Y. Links are in the description, along with a link to the moderator video that Dear mentioned. Thanks again for listening, and thanks to everyone who makes the Sewers of Paris possible on Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/mattbaum to support the show and get some backer rewards. I post clips of the stuff that we talk about on each episode on Twitter and Facebook. Reach out, let me know your thoughts on the show at sewerspodcast@gmail.com. And check out my YouTube series, Culture Cruise, for detailed explorations of queer milestones from TV and film. The theme song for The Sewers of Paris is Parisian from filmmusic.io by Kevin MacLeod of Comtech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 4.0. And until next time, croissant.